versus it. Pastime of Vlad Maharaj's life, Hiranyakashipu's conquering the universe, and then his torturing Vlad Maharaj, and ultimately Hiranyakashipu killing, being killed by Lord Nrisimhadeva, and then Vlad Maharaj's extensive prayers takes up a good part of this entire canto. And it's an important pastime because it discusses the principle of pulsion. There are these 10 aspects of 10 topics of Srimad Bhagavatam. One of them is Krishna's giving protection to his devotees. Of course, we envisage protection here in this context as giving physical protection, and that's how those who are on the bodily concept of life would like to see protection as always being that Lord Nrisimhadeva is never going to allow anything to happen to our bodies. That isn't necessarily the fact, as you can see from elsewhere. But why then is that pastime presented in this way? Because it's the most visible way of describing Krishna's protection. The fact that Krishna saves and protects the devotional character of a Vaishnava, the fact that Krishna, Yo Rakshima Pami Aham, that he protects our spiritual assets, even if they're accumulating or building up from life to life, is not so necessarily readily visible. But when he's protecting someone's physical body, well, that's something that's easy to narrate, easy to witness, easy for us to also understand. Hard for me to concentrate. And so we shouldn't necessarily demand or expect from Krishna that he should deal with us, deal with everyone else, deal with our next of kin or so many others in the same way as he does with Prahlad Maharaj. Often that's an expectation of devotees. Devotees expect that something's happening, you know, or someone's having an operation or something like that, then you should just please pray to Krishna for me, which means to pray to Krishna that the same thing will happen. He'll protect my uncle in the same way that he protected Lal Maharaj. It may not be the same way. Krishna gives protection. But it'll be the protection that we need, not necessarily the protection that we want. And it'll be the protection that we're actually deserving of, rather than that which we may be demanding or expecting. Under all conditions, Krishna protected the Pandavas because he had a plan for them. He had a plan that they should go on to rule the world. He didn't protect Abhimanyu because that wasn't in his vision, that Abhimanyu should be part of the dynasty that rules the world. Neither did he protect so many others. In fact, we see that many, many great heroes on the side of the Pandavas, who were on the side of justice, they also perished. And then at a certain point, he didn't protect the Pandavas either, because that was also the conclusion of his pastime. For instance, getting back to Abhimanyu again, Abhimanyu also had a certain karma, which is described in the Mahabharata, that he was to live off. And so Lord Krishna didn't give him protection, but he certainly gave protection to Arjuna, because he was in that bond of trust with Arjuna. In fact, although it's not narrated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, but elsewhere, at the time when King Indra offers his prayers to Lord Krishna at the conclusion of the lifting of Govardhan Hill, then when everything's said and done, Krishna says, is there something else that you want to say? He says, yes. He says, you know that I have a son who's the same age as you, by Kunti. His name is Arjuna. He says, my request is that you give him protection, just like you gave protection to the inhabitants of Vrindavan, and that ultimately there'll be a fratricidal war between the Pandavas and the Kauravas, and my request is that you take care of him. So of course Indra is seeing Arjuna as his son, and he's not necessarily seeing him as Krishna's eternal associate. But still then Krishna agrees, and he says yes, of course. And Krishna says like that, Kunti up, Jani Heen, me bhakta up, and Ashuti says, my devotee never perish. Krishna's protection, or his promise that devotees don't perish, should be understood really in the broadest sense. It has to be seen in the context of the fact that Krishna is also, he's not just giving protection, but it should also be seen that he's giving protection in the context of also not being, the phrase that Prabhupada uses is our order supply. In other words, he's not meant to be the person who is fulfilling our desires. So he's giving protection, but at the same time he's not our servant. He's the master. So how is it that the master gives protection? That is something that needs to be understood and really studied deeply. And here, now we'll read this verse, but that's the one of the main messages of this very extensive pastime. And there are many others that are to be understood from here. Another one is the constant conflict that exists between sense enjoyers and transcendentalists in this material world, because the material world is a place for sense enjoyers, but the whole purpose of the material world is to turn the sense enjoyers into transcendentalists. And when the former, the sense enjoyers, are attached to this world being the all in all, and obviously transcendentalists are very much interested in ensuring that conditioned souls become liberated, then there's a conflict. And that conflict is eternal. It goes on as long as the material world's been going on. It will continue to go on. And it's not a conflict that's based upon physical boundaries, geographical boundaries. Here it's taking place in sort of a realm where there's no boundaries within the family, the father and son. With Pandavas, it took place between brothers. So it's always there. It's the dynamic that's always there. In fact, it's something that we experience within ourselves. So Krishna, at the end of the third chapter, he talks about evam buddhi param buddha samstava atmanam atmanam. He said you should control your lower self by your higher self. What is the lower self? The lower self is the self that has an inclination towards sense enjoyment. The higher self is the self that has an inclination towards Krishna consciousness. So, and we experience conflict. We're in conflict with ourselves, what to speak of being in conflict with others. And that's part of the dynamic of the material world. So in Vishnu Purana, therefore, it says, Lokisin Vidhita Nishta. No, it says that in this material world, Sura Asura Evacha Vishnu Bhakta Parodeva Asura Tadviparyaya. That there's two types of people in this world. There are the devotees, Sura, and there are the Asura. And of course, the word Asura is just a negation of the word Sura. So here, Shastra then says, and what's a Sura, Vishnu, Bhakta, Snitodhiva? Someone who is a Vishnu Bhakta, he's a Sura. And Asura Tadviparya. And then, by default, everybody else, everything else, is an Asura. So it's a pretty general classification. It says you're a devotee, and if you're not a devotee, then you're a demon. The Prabhupada says that repeatedly. Which puts a lot of people into the in that classification. Here we see Hiranyakashipu, he's like a real extreme of a demon, someone who really does bad to others, someone who tortures his own son. It doesn't require that to fall into the demon category. More or less, by Vishnu Purana, it says, if you're just not a devotee, then you're a demon. Or at least you're, as Krishna says like that, that someone who says, asuram bhavanashita, you live under the shelter of an asuric nature, asuric temperament. Meat-eating is asuric. Abortion is asuric. Yesterday it was announced how in the district of Washington, which is actually it's just the capital of America, so it's not actually under any state, but it's under the national jurisdiction, they've proposed the legalizing of same-sex marriage and and then today it was another state, Maryland, I think so. The state of Maryland has also accepted it because it's up to, it's the sixth state in America that's accepted same-sex marriage. It's also demoniac. Sex life is for what purposes? For procreation. Krishna conscious procreation. So, same-sex, you don't procreate. So, therefore, whereas the business of the suras is to decrease sex life, the business of the asuras is to increase it. And that's what Hiranyakashipu is all about. So, gold, unlimited sex life, these are the real perks and the enjoyment of materialistic people. Without these things, life is impossible, inconceivable, incomprehensible. So it's meaningless. It doesn't mean anything to them. And it's always there. It always will be there. This type of dilemma, this type of dynamic, the divine and the demoniac, that Krishna protects his devotees, that's also to be seen. The one thing certainly is to be learned from Prahlad Maharaj's example is the type of determination that's required of a devotee and a preacher. Because devotees meet with antagonistic people, so they're inevitably going to meet with some type of persecution. We don't like to hear of those type of things because no one likes to be persecuted. But to a greater or lesser degree, the history of religion, not Vaishnavism, but religion, every religion, means that there is always persecution. Because when a religion becomes too prominent, when it becomes too much of a threat to the status quo, when, in other words, too many people take to spiritual life, then both the values and even the economy upon which the general materialistic society is based on comes under threat. And then the only way to deal with the threat is you try to remove it. Haridas Thakur, all he was doing is chanting japa, living in a cave, but he started to get too many followers, and those followers all started to spend too much time chanting Hare Krishna, and therefore the local landlord thought this is no good. People aren't going to be working. They're going to be chanting Hare Krishna instead of working. If they work, then our economy is going to implode. It's going to decrease. Well, we have to get rid of him. So he made a plan to get rid of Haridas Thakur. Of course, it didn't work. But in the meantime, Haridas Thakur was also beaten in 21 marketplaces. So these things are going on, and of course we know about Jesus Christ and everyone. And in one sense, it's good. It's good for a religion, and it's good for believers to have to deal with persecution because it gets them off the mental platform really fast. And of course, it also determines as to who's the Judas and who's the real disciple, because people may not necessarily espouse their faith or publicly stand out with it when it's a question of life or death. And you see the example of just the early Christian days, how the Christians were willing to go through phenomenal persecution from the Romans. Because they believed in Christianity. So Prahlad Maharaj is also showing us that example, that yes, you need to be willing to stand up for what you believe. You need to be able to. You need to be willing to tell people, and then even when they're putting your life at risk. Anyway, it's not such a big thing. In a body-conscious society, in a society where everyone's brainwashed to believe that the body is the all-in-all, and under all circumstances, you have to try to extend your life as long as possible, then we put a lot of stock in the value of this body. But you see, Prabhupada didn't really care very much. Prabhupada didn't have an incurable disease. He didn't have a disease that couldn't be treated, but he wasn't really very interested. You have to give up the body sooner or later, whether you give it up at age 20 or age 60 or age 80. Sooner or later it should go empty. What's the big thing? Because if we're attached to it as the all-in-all, then it's a big thing. But otherwise, a devotee serves Krishna in this life, but he serves Krishna in the next life. He serves Krishna in the material world, he serves Krishna in the spiritual world. They continue to serve. So whether it's with this instrument or another instrument, somebody you're going to have. There's no argument about that. You'll have a body. Unless you commit suicide. But otherwise, then you have a ghost body, which is another type of body, but it's not such a good body for service. So devotees shouldn't be excessively concerned. Prabhupada didn't exhibit such concern. And in one sense, you could say he had a lot to be concerned about. He had a lot to be concerned about because he had this whole Krishna conscious movement. So that's another thing. Prahlad Maharaj, he wasn't concerned. He wasn't concerned about what would happen to him. He left it up to Krishna. Not once, not twice, but multiple times. I can't keep track of how many times it was that Hiranyakashipu tried to kill his own son. And then finally, he, instead of having it done, he was going to do it himself. And that's what this verse is about. It said, Satyam vidhatum nija mritya vashitam vyaktim chabate shakile shuchatmana adrishya tatyad putarupam udvahan stambe sabhayam namrigam namanusham. To prove that the statement of a servant, Prahlad Maharaj, was substantial, in other words, to prove that the Supreme Lord is present everywhere, even within the pillar of an assembly hall, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, exhibited a wonderful form never before seen. The form was neither that of a man nor that of a lion. Thus, the Lord appeared in his wonderful form in the assembly hall. Let's just repeat that together. To prove that the statement of his servant, Prahlad Maharaj, was substantial. In other words, to prove that the Supreme Lord is present everywhere, even within the pillar of an assembly hall. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, exhibited a wonderful form never before seen. The form was neither that of a man nor that of a lion. Thus the Lord appeared in his wonderful form in the assembly hall. And here's Srila Prabhupada's purport. When Hiranyakashipu asked Prahlad Maharaj, where is your Lord? Is he present in this pillar? Prahlad Maharaj replied fearlessly, yes, my Lord is present everywhere. Therefore, to convince Hiranyakashipu that the statement of Prahlad Maharaj was unmistakably true, the Lord appeared from the pillar. The Lord appeared as half lion and half man, so that Hiranyakashipu could not understand whether the great giant was a lion or a human being. To substantiate Prahlad's statement, The Lord proved that his devotee, as declared in Bhagavad Gita, is never vanquished. Kunteya padjanihi nami bhakta nashyati. Prahlad Maharaj, the demoniac father, had repeatedly threatened to kill Prahlad Maharaj, but Prahlad was confident that he could not be killed, since he was protected by the Supreme Lord. By appearing from the pillar, the Lord encouraged his devotee, saying, in effect, don't worry, I'm present here. By manifesting his form as Nrisimhadev, the Lord also preserved the truth of Lord Brahma's promise that Hiranyakashipu was not to be killed by any animal or any man. The Lord appeared in a form that could not be said to be fully a man or a lion. Here Srila Prabhupada explains another context of what it means that Krishna is protecting the devotee. And that means that he protects the devotee's word. So there's two devotees here in question. One is, he's protecting the word of Lord Brahma, who gave all these conditions